Discovery's four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0,
and lift off.
Hello, world, and welcome to possibly the last Sunday edition of the Gadget Cast. My name is Gregory McFadden, joined always with my co-host, Travis M.C.
Space Travel
P.
Yeah, I mean, after all this time, Greg, you still can't nail it. I don't understand this.
If I had the same, if I like read the same thing every time, I guess I could nail the timing. But I'm like, let me fit something different in. Let me try and be original. And but you know what? I think it was kind of nice because it was Travis MC Space Travel and went P. And it, you know,
I mean, it went
in between the MCP. And I think I kind of liked it. I was digging it. I'm like, ooh, yeah. But then I was like, I kind of missed it. So I know Travis is going to call me out on it because why not?
Well, you have to put in Justine's space travel in there too.
We do. I think I need to do like a remix because I've always felt the intro is a little too long too. I like it, but I'm like, you know, maybe we got to get a little more to the action. So I got to set some time and do a remix, get Justine in on the space travel.
There you go.
It's going to be intro song. Maybe when we switch from the Sunday show, that's when we'll debut the new intro.
The Garg cast, the Garg mix.
Listen, just a quick note, Gadget Cast isn't going anywhere. This is mostly for the live viewers because this podcast usually goes out on Monday. Maybe we'll have to look into changing that time as well, right? If we're going to change the date of the live show. But either way, we're looking to change the live show of Gadget Cast probably to Saturday. So it's going to be it's going to be a little earlier, I guess. But we're not 100% sure on when that will happen. Programming note, though, next Sunday is Easter Sunday. I will not be doing GadgetCast on Sunday. Travis is welcome to do GadgetCast, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be taking off, too. So yeah. We'll be back next week with a show, and it will probably be on Saturday or another day, not Sunday. And then if you're an audio listener, if we're doing the show earlier, I like to get it out the next day. So it'll probably either go up Sunday or I don't know, maybe we'll keep it Monday if the listens go down for some reason. I don't know, maybe people aren't listening to podcasts on Sunday and it's like, I'm not listening to that. I kind of did like to get out on like the work day of like a Monday. I guess it really didn't matter as much in like the pandemic because like people are working from home. It was something we noticed. Remember that in the beginning of the pandemic, we noticed our listens actually went down because people weren't listening to podcasts on their commute anymore, but they went back up after a while. So that was interesting. Yep.
Yeah, that's true. I remember that. That's kind of interesting. And before we, I actually want to move on to something that's kind of lighter before we get into the heavier stuff. So the people that were watching or listening or even watched the podcast we did a couple weeks ago with now friend of the show, Matt Asini, from This Is, one of the things that came up during that particular podcast was that I order McFlurries a specific way from McDonald's. And I saw, if you're not following myself or Gregory on Twitter, then you missed out on Gregory finally trying a McFlurry with Oreo and M&Ms. Now, the controversy here is neither Matt nor Greg knew that this is a thing you could do. And I just have been asking for it the entire time, oblivious to the fact that people were afraid to ask for more than one topping. So go ahead and give your review. I don't completely agree with your review, but go ahead and give your review and tell us how it went from the ordering process to everything else. I'd love to hear it.
Oh, so this is funny because the pandemic's changed how I've done like a lot of things. And, you know, I talk on GadgetCast all the time. I'm kind of shy and anxious and stuff like that. But mobile ordering's like a thing. Now at McDonald's and stuff like that, I'm usually not like the mobile order type of guy. It's usually like, all right, I'll go in and say my order to the person. I'll grace them with my presence and voice. But I did the mobile order because I like to order it ahead of time, just get in and out of the McDonald's as soon as possible or go through the drive-thru or something like that. But the drive-thru was like really long. So the life hack is mobile order, wait till it's done, go in, grab it, leave. So I did that. And one of the benefits of doing a mobile order is you see all the options that you don't know you can do. So I did the McFlurry. I saw the, you know, did the Oreo McFlurry, saw the option to add M&Ms. Travis, did you know there's an amount of like M&Ms you can add? There's levels of M&Ms. You could add like $3 worth of M&Ms on your McFlurry.
First of all, I didn't know there was a mobile app for McDonald's, let alone that there was a layer level to M&Ms. But now that I know this, I want to double the price of my McFlurry by adding $3 worth of M&Ms.
Yeah, so me and my fiance went to go get the Travis special, as I called it. And I was originally going to go through the drive-thru, but I think there was a line on it. And I was going to make a video going through the drive-thru and going, I'm going to order the Travis MCP special, Oreo M&M McFlurry, and see what they said. So I was going to make you out like the Travis Scott, but the Travis MCP McDonald's special. But I did it through the mobile ordering app. Micah actually got the McFlurry with Oreo, M&M, and hot fudge. So she got she got everything. She got her own thing there.
I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah, so when we said there was special things on the McDonald's app, yeah, you can order pretty much anything. So anyway, I spent so long talking about this ordering process. The McFlurry itself, listen, I love the McFlurry. I think it's a pretty underrated dessert treat. It's not that much money. M&M's my favorite. Sometimes I'll do Oreo. Travis is right. They don't know how to mix it. So when they give it to you, it's like there's like a just plop of Oreo on top. And it's like, what is this? There's like dirt on top of my McFlurry. So you know, I mix it up myself. I did more than one bite. Travis said, you only did one bite. Listen, that was just for the review. You know, I had my thoughts together. Yeah. I think I still prefer the regular M&M McFlurry. I think the Oreo with it is just, I don't know, it's like too much for me. But it was still good. Like, I wasn't like, oh, this is awful. So it was still good. But I still think I'd rather just get an M&M McFlurry.
Well, what did your fiance think? Because she went another level deeper. What did she think?
Oh, that was a mistake.
No surprise. Even I wouldn't do that. Even I wouldn't have gone that far.
That was a mistake. That was not good. That was like, oh my God. The funny part is though, I did try hers and I thought it was better. I thought it was great. I was like, you know what? I like the hot fudge edition. This now, because now you're adding in a third option, so now it just doesn't taste like, am I getting the Oreo M&M? Now you add a third flavor into the mix, and I thought it was better than mine, so I might get that again.
Well, the thing that I like the shell. So if I were to do it, I would want them to put shell on it, or in it, however they would manage that.
They still need to bring back the Stroop Waffle McFlurry, which was a limited time thing. I think they did that like last summer, or the summer before that, and that was the best one. It was so good.
That doesn't even sound like a real thing. I've never heard of such a thing.
Hey, I thought of I've always joked about doing like a food YouTube channel just for fun, because I think I would have like fun with it. I don't even care if it got like views. I was thinking a great idea for a food YouTube channel. I don't know if anyone does this. I'm not well versed in the food YouTube scene. If anyone in the chat knows, does anyone like go out there and like make weird combinations at restaurants with like all like this like mobile ordering, like I was exposed to the options of what you can put on like a McDonald's hamburger, and it's pretty mind-boggling because it's things you normally wouldn't like want to bother someone like asking, like, hey, can you put like the bacon on this and do this and that, because it's kind of pretentious to like ask for like all these things. But if you put in a mobile order, it's all just like listed out, like they have to do it.
Oh wow.
So does anyone go and just make like weird fast food orders, like special, like I'm gonna make like the Greg menu, and it's gonna be like, yeah, it's going to be like Travis, like telling people like, you get the Oreo M&M McFlurry, it's better. So I think that's a good idea for a channel. What do you like?
I mean, I would do stuff like that too, because I like bad food. And I put this on Twitter, one of the unlisted videos I have on my YouTube channel was me trying different milkshakes from Burger King. Is one of the things that I thought
would
be
fun. Yes,
you
sent me that video. You're like, this is how you do a review. And it was, it was a lot better than my review. It was a legitimate review of milkshakes. So yeah.
That was like my third video ever that I ever shot. Like sitting there with three different milkshakes from
Burger
King.
Was that just on like the Travis MCP, like the main channel, like milkshake review?
So it was in between. I was random. I had done, I think, one like tech review, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with my channel. And I'm like, I like milkshakes, and I saw it at Burger King. Let me try this for a YouTube video. Maybe it'll do well. And you know, it's like, again, it's like my third ever YouTube video. So I unlisted it because it doesn't make any sense now, but yeah, it. So someone said in a chat, now I love, we're in a great time of year, Cadbury. I love Cadbury eggs so much. But apparently, according to 619, he says they have a Cadbury cream egg McFlurry. I would not do that. So, because here's the thing.
I don't think so.
There are things that I love, like bacon. I love bacon.
Yeah.
I love donuts. But whenever someone puts bacon on a donut, I don't want that. So I feel like you can take two really good things, put them together, and it becomes less than in either one of those things. Like it goes the opposite direction. And that sounds like one of those things. A Cadbury egg McFlurry does not sound good at all.
It could be good. Cadbury is like bigger in the UK, but over here, no, I don't think they would ever do that.
We could do a food gadget food cast. We could do a fast food cast, and we could have. I bet Matt would jump on that.
Matt, we could would do like totally a do it.
That would be cool, man. Maybe we should do a fast food episode. Anyway, I'm sure most people are stopped listening now. So let's get on.
Listen. I said goodbye to the Little Caesars pretzel crust pizza yesterday. Today's the last day to order it. I ordered it yesterday. It is? Yeah.
Why?
It's gone. It's over. I don't know.
What?
Limited time thing. They only had it out for a month. So.
I'm
hitting all the fast food places up. Speaking, you said you like donuts. GadgetCast update. I got the first vaccine, Travis.
So funny you say that. I just sent an email out that I might be able to get my first one this week. I think it's the Moderna. What did you get?
Moderna.
Yeah, I think that's the one I'm getting.
That's the best one. That's the one I got.
Can I talk honestly about this? This kind of worries me a little bit. I don't want to go too deep into this because I know some people, you don't want to, you know, some people really need it and they, you know, they can't get it yet, but I'm definitely getting the first one. I am really on the fence about the second one.
You have to get the second one though.
Well, here's the thing. I see a lot of reports of people being really sick after the second one. And that concerns me like bad. And I'm like, they're like, the first one was fine. The second one, I was out for 2 days. I'm like, wait, what? What happened?
I mean, that means your immune system's working. I don't know. I think you have to get the second one though.
I don't know, man. I'm gonna get the first one hopefully this week, and then I don't know what happens after that. I don't know what happens after that, Greg. I don't know. We'll see how
you have to get it because they make you like make a second appointment, and you're gonna feel bad if you know they just like throw that away. And you're gonna be like, ooh.
Anyway,
I'll convince you. Anyway, I got it. I'm happy. I'm like 4 days in. I feel fine after the first one. So it feels weird because it's like, hey, maybe in like a month, I could go out again and not be like so worried all the time.
So we actually have some voicemails and emails that have been waiting. So let's
This is a tech podcast. I'm sorry. We spent a lot of time talking about food as we do. Listen, there's tech news is pretty light right now, so you're good. Listen, we got a lot of follow-up because our email's been out of whack for a while, and we've been getting like tons of spam, but I made an effort to try and go through and find all the legitimate emails, and we're gonna do some follow-up. But first, we do have a voicemail, which I do want to play for you. Now, this is really old because this is from 619. He's always here in the live chat every single week. And he left this a while ago, but he sent it to our email. So he didn't send it to the Anchor voicemail, which is how I missed it. So it was a recording in the email. But I do have it here. It's older, but we're going to play it because I found it really funny.
Hey, you guys. First off, thanks for answering all of our voicemails and emails in the last show. Much appreciated. Also, Travis, congrats on your TV thing. Hope it goes well for you. And as for you, Greg, you want to be on TV and all that? Well, I did see you the other day. You were on the Maury Show, as I predicted. And yes, you were the father to a little baby boy called Travis Jr. Happy fathering.
Funny.
Wow.
Unreal.
Wow. I think that's like 3 months old.
It's really old. Greg has been behind on getting voicemails and stuff, but that's okay. It was a good voicemail.
We usually say send them to the Anchor one, so I didn't think check the email. But yeah, it was there. I found the last part really funny. So
that was an email voicemail. Is that what that was? That's another idea.
He sent an audio file in the email, which I guess you could do, but I just wasn't on the lookout for it.
Oh wow!
But cool. Yeah, so cool. Apparently, 619 over here with the jokes. Thanks. Regular comedian over here. Funny guy. Yeah. All right. We also have some email. I think we answered this in the last show, but this is from Morris Richmond, who said, if you could get your hands on Apple Glass now for $1,500, would you? Or would you wait 2 to 3 years and get it for $500?
Yeah, we did answer that one last time. But, you know, for people who maybe missed last episode, I mean, I want it now. Give it to me now.
I would pay $1,500 for it now. I'd pay $2,000 for it now, probably. So, yeah. I probably shouldn't admit that, but... I hope Apple, listen, I'll add some more context to this. I really hope Apple doesn't, whenever they release these Apple glasses, whatever they're called, I really hope it isn't like $1,500. I hope they go for a more mainstream price. Every successful Apple product that they've released, besides Macs, those are computers, those are a little bit, you know, those are for work, so people will spend more money on them. But every single consumer product they've released that's been like successful has been in that $500 range. If you look at the iPod, the iPhone, the Apple Watch. They're mainstream big hitters. You see them everywhere. Everyone has them. They need to be in that $500 price range. If they price them any more than that, they are probably not going to do well because people will buy something for $500. People won't buy something if it's like a new technology and it's not proven. People are not going to be spending $1,500. A lot of people won't be spending it. And Apple needs everyone to wear these because that's how the reason why Apple's mobile products do so well is because when they launch, they're great products that people use and a bunch of early people get them. And then those early people that really love those products never shut up about them. Like, I love my iPhone. I love my iPod. I love my Apple Watch. And I think that's how Apple generates a lot of these sales, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree to a certain degree, but the other way is a lot of people aren't going to wear this anyway. So I think there'll be a fashion statement and there'll be tech people, but I think your common person who's going to get an iPhone is not going to wear Apple Glass, no matter what the price
is. But if they don't, it's a failure of the product. Like Apple, like I think if Apple's going to make these things, like the glasses format, not like the headset, I think they want this to be as big as the iPhone. I think they've even said so like in interviews, like this is going to be bigger than the iPhone or as big as the iPhone. And if that doesn't do that for them, if they can't get every single iPhone owner wearing Apple glasses, I think that is a failure of the product because I know right now everyone who buys like accessories, especially glasses, like not everyone's going to buy them because of the fashion thing. But they really need to make a use case for AR glasses where people who don't want to wear glasses wear them despite the fact because, oh my God, this functionality is so good, I need to wear them. I think that's what they need to do. I don't know if they can do it. That's a tall order for Apple, but I think they need to.
And that's assuredly the point is like, I mean, Snapchat's huge, or at least it was, and they came out with Snapchat glasses, and I don't know how many people ever got those. And while Apple is a little different than that, I think that the purchase of Snapchat glasses would have been an easier pick for those type of people because A, they were a lot less expensive, and B, they were kind of directly connected to this particular popular app when it came out. Now, Apple is a lifestyle brand, and if anyone can pull it off, Apple can. So let me be clear. Like, I'm not saying that they can't. I just don't know that it's the right type of product to get that wide-ranging support. I could be wrong. I'll probably get it just because I think it's interesting, but I don't know that I'm going to see a whole bunch of people with it. But we'll see.
This product would literally have to do things that any of these other glasses products haven't done yet, and that's really hard to envision because it's kind of just science fiction at this point. But if someone can actually make these like indispensable, like really useful, I think it would be a big hit. But again, that is a super tall order. That is not something that's easy. Apple just can't release like a pair of glasses that do something very similar to like the Echo Frames or Snapchat Spectacles or even every like Google Glass and combine that. Even if it was all those features combined, they would still need something more to make these like a big hit. And yeah, I don't know if they'll do it. It's going to be very hard for them because they're looking for the next big thing as these iPhone sales start to eventually slow down, which they were. But then the 5G cycle kicked in, but that's not going to last forever. All right, let's move on, though.
What's the other email?
We have another email from the man himself, 619. He's in the show twice. Can you believe it? Hey guys, so a couple days ago, soccer legend Thierry Henry said he was going to disable his social media account because of the amount of hate and racist comments were too toxic. He did, however, claim he would return to social media if tech and social media companies can address racism and hate in the same way they address copyright. Do you think it's possible to use the same methods preventing copyright content to also prevent hate and racism online? 619 WWE fan.
So the question is, what do we think technology can bridge the gap for racism?
Do you think it's possible to use the same method? So Thierry Henry said that he would return to social media if tech and social media companies can address racism and hate in the same way they go after copyright. So this guy was basically, yeah.
I mean, to a certain degree, they do with blocked words. YouTube does this in the back end. When you're a creator, there's like words you can block out so they don't actually show. I think the problem isn't so much can someone block out words and stuff. Like, you can do that. There's muting, but that already exists. So no, I think the larger problem is with humans. And I could talk a lot about that. Like, for as long as there'll be someone who has a message of hate or a message of discord, they will find a way through any kind of obstacle that you put in their way because they're already doing it. So I don't think technology is going to be the way through. The only way through would be humans changing, and that's not going to happen. So for every obstacle you put in the way of someone, they will find a way, perhaps, perhaps using that same technology to overcome it.
It's a much harder problem to tackle because with copyright and stuff, it's money, right? So they run whatever program or machine learning, whatever they're doing to match these things of like a song. And, you know, you play the song, it hears the song, goes, that's the song that you can't be playing on Twitter, or video you can't be playing on Twitter. We're going to take it down. There's context too, right? Like, someone says something that might have a racist word in it, but the social media post isn't necessarily racist. Now, if you had a filter just taking out that word every single time, you could be taking down legitimate posts that was addressing a racist incident and bringing awareness to it. But then all of a sudden, this tweet is taken down, and that would be really bad, because now all of a sudden, you're not shining a light on the problems we have. Now you're just kind of sweeping it under the rug. There's also the problem of a lot of these social media companies were created in America or the West, and they have this idea of free speech. I don't necessarily know. I'm not going to say which side I'm on of, like, oh, should there be freedom of speech for even like hate speech and all this stuff? But they're more hesitant to take down free speech posts, even if there's like hateful things in it, not even just racism, like hateful or violent or other things. There has to be like a bar for them to take it down first. And that's kind of how they go. I don't necessarily know if that's wrong or right. I think a lot of these cases are pretty clear cut. There's a lot of things I see on social media where I wish some stuff was just taken down because it doesn't serve any purpose. It's just hate and stuff like that. Twitter and other companies usually are pretty good if you report it. But like Travis said, there's like 7 billion people on this planet, and a lot of them are unfortunately jerks, and they can go make another account and they can make a troll account. And it's really hard to crack down on all of those tweets going on. So I don't know if they could ever do it the same way they would do it for copyright ID. But I guess there's also a legitimate point that this soccer player was making. And that is that companies, you know, there's something to be said about companies, you know, listen, companies make money, right? We talk about this all the time. That's the goal of a company. There's nothing wrong with that. But the reason why they're so aggressive on copyright IDs with music and video is because there's money being exchanged there. Whereas if someone posts something racist online, there's not necessarily money to be made there. So I think that's kind of like the discretion. But yeah, social media, it's very tricky. This is a longstanding problem with hate speech and just violence in general. And I don't know how you solve it. It's very perplexing.
Yeah, I mean, I you only can solve it with humans. That's a conversation maybe for another day. I'm willing to get into it, but I think maybe, you know, all things
considered. This is a heavy GadgetCast episode.
That's what I'm saying.
What's going on?
Let's talk about other things. Okay, so
It was a good question, though. Thank you, 619, for sending that in. Listen, it's tough. He thanks us for our answers. So we made some excellent points. You know, my point maybe a little bit better. We can talk about this last email, and then we can actually talk about your MacBook Air video, which you just posted. And this is from David Hagen. This was a follow-up. You complained about this in your last video, that Final Cut projects are so big, and all of a sudden you have a 256 gigabyte hard drive, and all of a sudden you have 100 gigabytes worth of video files. Now, I know Renee told you some stuff to do. I should have told you this on the last show because I do know about this, but David kind of gave us this guide of how to delete Final Cut renders.
Very nice.
For those who are wondering, you would go to Preferences. Hold on. Oh, why isn't this email loading up now? I'm trying to load up the whole thing. Okay. So you would go to File. You would go to, on Final Cut, you go to File, Delete Generated Library Files, Delete Render Files, and then Delete All Render Files. And that would free up all your space in Final Cut. So you go to in Final Cut, you'd go on the project, hit File, scroll down to Delete Generated Files, and that's how you could free up all those rendered files once you're done with your project, and then you can load in more footage and work again. Because I remember in your review, you're going, if I can work on one project and that's it. Well, you necessarily wouldn't have to get rid of the entire project. You could just delete the render files after, start a new project, and then that would work again.
Yeah, because it was a project that was really big. So I guess the project has render files in it? Is that what he's basically saying? Okay.
So there's render files in that project. If you go to File, Delete the Generated Library of Files, you would basically free up all that render space again, which, as you know, is a lot.
Yeah, and the thing is like, it's not even necessary. So from what I understand, all that stuff is meant for, ironically, Intel-based Macs that needed a little bit more help with certain files and file sizes. As we know, the M1s are so ridiculously powerful, they don't even need that help. So unfortunately, it's the setting that's meant to help on the majority of computers. It'd be great if the system was like aware of what hardware you're on and go, you know what, we could turn this off for you, save you a lot of space, I think.
Yeah. It's complicated. I tried looking into this a little bit, but I think it's, like you said, like, on old Intel machines, it's also just like so many different types of footage that you're working with that I think turning that off by default could lead to some like performance issue. I think like Apple wants to make sure you load up Final Cut and you don't like see like it doesn't slow down, because then all of a sudden you're writing a bad review about Final Cut rather than you have this problem and then you look how to fix it and you go, okay, that's it. Okay, that's good. So it's for more advanced users, right? It's Final Cut, so maybe they expect people to kind of tune it themselves. But that is a handy tip. And so Travis, you posted this video one month after using the M1 MacBook Air. Do you want to update the GadgetCast listeners with your experience?
So if you missed the video, it's up on the page now. So I haven't been using it hardcore for a month. To be clear, like, I'm using it mainly just for editing and then a little bit of browsing because I wanted to see what the experience was like. So a couple of things. Number one, it's fast. I mean, especially if you're like just browsing the net and stuff, it's ridiculous. Like, it's really, really well done. Battery life, mainly because I'm editing most of the time on it, wasn't as good as I thought it would be. However, when I think about it realistically and I think, okay, if I'm not editing on it and I'm just browsing and stuff, battery doesn't seem to move, which is great, right? So that means it's really good. I like the design of it. So any kind of new design is cool, but this to me is still new because I never had an Air before. The screen, like I said before, is great. The touchpad is much better than I ever thought it would be. Really didn't think I would, you know, most touchpads, especially if you're on Windows, you're like, I'll deal with it. This is actually I don't want to say it's a joy, but it's like, it's really well put together. I'm like, how is this a good thing? I don't understand. It's a good thing. And I said some other things in the video. Make sure you check it out. But ultimately, my conclusion was that I didn't really need it, because the reason I bought it was to replace my iPad Pro. And what I've been noticing is, because right now I'm so far behind on Final Cut as far as like experience wise, when I need to turn around a fast video, I go right back to my iPad because I'm just so much faster at it. Now, I'm still trying to get faster and better. on Final Cut. And I know growth wise, that's the way to go because I'm going to learn a lot more things, be able to do more things in my videos. And I do enjoy the laptop. The interesting thing are some of the comments. It's really interesting to see what are very obviously like Apple sheep kind of like wanting to defend something that I'm not really tearing down. Now, I did make some comments about, and the whole video premise is coming from Windows to Mac. Some guy said, oh, the mass majority of this video was about Mac OS and not the MacBook. And I'm thinking, if I take Mac OS off the MacBook, what am I reviewing?
Yes.
It's got a keyboard, it's got a monitor, and two USB. That was cool. Like, how do you say that?
I think you did both really well because you reviewed the hardware as well, and you said all the things you liked about the hardware. But I think, especially from your angle, the thing is going over from Windows to Mac OS and how different it is to work things there. Your video literally has lifelong Windows user, so you have to talk about it from the experience of a Windows user.
And then I had people say, well, you should have just Googled all this stuff. Yeah, here's the thing. If I had Googled the solutions, my video would have been exactly the same as the other million other videos that are out there talking about it. I don't want that. I want you to know what it's like from someone who's trying to figure it out by themselves, like intuitively. Like, yeah, you can Google the answers to anything, but that's right. Not the point of that video. The video is to go, okay, what's the difference? Now, at the end, I was very clear in saying, 90% of the people need a laptop. This is probably the laptop you should get. Like, it's hard for me to look at that laptop and go, nah, there's a better Windows $1,000 laptop for you if you're not gaming. No, I can't think of any that are better than this laptop if you're not gaming. And unless you have some type of weird app that doesn't exist on Mac OS and can't be like emulated in some way. Like, no, this is what they've said is true. It's a darn good laptop in so many different ways. So, and that's me, you know, as someone who won't use it as like my main PC, my desktop I'm doing the stream on is Windows. I still would think that's the laptop I would use. So, you know, and then it was really interesting because then people would say like, you know, oh, why you're whining. I'm like, first of all, I wasn't whining. I was explaining what was going on. And then at the end talked about, it's a great laptop. You should buy it. Some people get so triggered. So I think it's time to do another brand loyalty video, which I have, I think I'm going to put in my canceled series of videos. I'm going to probably shoot that today or tomorrow and release that because I'm tired of people getting their feelings tied up in brands. Listen, the product is really good. The only thing that's the looming shadow, which also came through the comments as well, is the M1X, which is almost too fast of a follow-up. Like the rumors and stuff are so fast after this thing came out that the existing hardware is almost getting overshadowed already. Because they're like, oh my God, this thing is so great. Wait until the next one. Well, I mean, you can say that about anything. But generally speaking, it's not within the first 3 months of the product being out. People are like, wait for that next thing. So that's the only thing that's kind of overshadowing this. A lot of people are saying, should I get this now? Should I wait for the new version? The only thing I keep telling them is, I believe, and I could be wrong, that any version that comes out of the M1X is going to be just more expensive. So this will be like, quote, the entry level at this price point, or maybe even a little less. Maybe it'll drop a little bit. Who knows? But anything else beyond this, the M1X is just going to be more expensive. Is that what you believe to be the case, Greg?
100%. So these are the entry-level models. Apple didn't replace anything on the higher end. So anything they're replacing after this, it's not like you're going to wake up tomorrow and it's going to be like, oh my God, there's a new $1,000 MacBook Air that has the M1X in it. It's going to be, you know, a new iMac, the newer MacBook Pros, the more expensive models. So those are like $1,700 machines. So anything you're buying from this thing, even if they upgrade it tomorrow, you still weren't going to get the same value, the same performance per dollar from this M1 chip. Not to say they won't be more performant, they will, but you're going to have to spend considerable more money to get those machines.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, it's a great piece of hardware. I am not unhappy that I have it. I just, if I had to do it over again, would I do it? Well, I mean, I got a couple of really great videos out of it, so maybe I would. But short of that, I don't really need it. I can certainly go, when the new iPad Pro comes out, I could certainly sell or trade my 12.9 in and get that mini LED and get that all that goodness and be right back where I'm at. But I also don't know that I need to leave. Like, I'm happy to have it. So it's really, I'll tell you, if it had a touchscreen, I would probably straight up get rid of my iPad Pro. But because it doesn't, that's such a big thing for me that, like, yeah, I really dig it. a lot. Now, I could use Sidecar. I haven't even used Sidecar yet.
Don't let that. Apple hear that, because they hear that and they go, well, okay, we'll make two. You can buy two.
Yeah. And then a lot of people, somewhat of a deal of how a lot of programs, I even made fun of one guy. When you click the X, it doesn't actually close the program. This was not even something I realized until someone in the comment section told me in one of my previous videos that a lot of times when you're clicking the X, it's not actually closing the program. Now, and I made a deal, I commented on that in this past video. And then some guy goes, well, you know, there's some programs that do that in Windows too. He goes, like Skype. And I'm like, Skype? What is this, 2011? What are you talking about? Who's using Skype? Like, what are you talking about? What about AIM or ICQ? Are you using those too? No, I shouldn't play. But the reality is, yeah, there are a couple of programs, and I hate those too on Windows. So if I hit the X, I'm done with it. I can minimize it. Just close the program. I'm done. I'm done with that. So. I like the piece of hardware. It's nice. I'm glad I have it.
Yeah, there's just, yeah, like you said with Windows, that was the first computer system I used was Mac. So, you know, going to like Windows computers later in life, that's something I found annoying with Windows, was like I click the X and it closes the program when I just wanted to close this one window. And that was like a huge, like when I first started using Windows computers, that was like a huge hurdle, because I'd be like closing one web browser window. All of a sudden, everything's gone. I'm like, no, I just wanted to get rid of that window. So I understand the reverse frustration of coming from Windows and going, I clicked this program. I don't want to go down to the dock and then quit out that application. So it's funny how there's like a different philosophy between Mac and Windows. Actually, I had a couple questions for you.
Now. Oh, here we go. Now, before, is it about the Mac?
Yes.
Or is it about something else?
Kind
okay,
of.
Go ahead.
Well, I had a couple questions. Let's see. I completely forgot the one I wanted to ask, and now I'm like mad because it was like a good question. So I'm gonna ask you the other question I had queued up for a while, and hopefully I can remember this. Creator-wise, right? Creator-wise, we always talk about how like releasing new videos is hard because, you know, there's something called the YouTube algorithm, and like if you make like certain content, like if you make like a bunch of smartphone content, YouTube knows to serve that videos to people. They know that people go to watch Travis's Amazon Renewed series. So, people like that, we'll recommend it. Mac videos. These were your first Mac videos. And I gotta say, for someone doing first time Mac videos, they did extremely well. These are your first Mac videos ever on the channel. And I don't think the algorithm treated them poorly in any regard. I'm looking at, you know, the first one you did, I think, got over 100,000 views. So that's a successful video right there. I think the last one you published is doing well. Correct me if I'm wrong. Do you plan to cover more Macs in the future now?
So here's the thing. I had some ideas about different type of content I wanted to do. And one of the other things you did want to talk about in this vein was I wanted to try things for the first time. And the Mac thing, I knew the Mac thing would do well because I kind of had iJustine in the back. But more than that, I knew that it was so popular. The subject was so popular across all channels that I should be able to get something out of it. Now, I didn't know I would get 112 or 1,000 views or whatever it is. I didn't know I was going to do that well, but I knew I would do pretty well. Having said that, like the second one did not do as well as I thought it would. It did fine. It was actually really good, but it didn't do as well as I hoped it would. And today's, the one that came out yesterday, is doing very well. Only thing I can tell is people there have an interest there. What I was shocked by was how poorly my broken iPhone video did. And that's what actually kind of crushed me, because I was excited to get that one out. It was so interesting and different, and it was phone related. And iPhone related. So I really expected it to do well, and it just didn't go anywhere. So as a creator, it's frustrating. I look at this strategically and I go, I need to do more Mac videos. But the reality is I have no idea where else I would even go with that subject, other than to talk about, and which I will, by the way, the upcoming Macs and stuff. I have no idea what else I would even do with my existing Mac now that I've reviewed it. What do you think?
Well, It's harder for you because it's your first Mac, and you know, you can only make, you know, first time Windows user Mac. I mean, that's kind of like a ship that will sail, right? Like you can't do that anymore once it's not your first Mac.
Yep.
But you know, reviewing Macs is way more expensive than reviewing a lot of technology out there. So it's a hard thing to go with. And again, these are your first ones, so you're still like a novice with this. So it's not even like, hey, you know, let me go over this video showing some, I mean, I guess you could go like, hey, some useful things I learned with the Mac from a first time user. There's stuff you could still do in this space. I don't know if you have the drive to make content like that. A lot of the new hardware might actually be really interesting to you. But again, as someone who reviews a lot of Macs, it is kind of a money pit. And I think anyone who reviews computer stuff will tell you that. But if, I mean, you know, it's something you might want to explore in the future, especially if it's something your audience wants to continue seeing. I'm just not sure.
One thing I noticed is that over the last, I've been looking at some of my videos and I've noticed that the commentary videos in general do better than like my review videos in general, at least at the early part. Like that seems to be it. And I think the reason why these Mac videos did well isn't so much that I'm reviewing the hardware, even though this last one was a review, it was the experience. And it was packaged the way it was specifically for the novice coming into this, you know, coming into this very popular thing and a novice coming into it, not knowing what to expect. And I thought people would be interested in that. And apparently they were. Beyond that, I would have to continue down that path. And one of the things I thought would be that thing, and maybe I didn't package it correctly, is how not to fix a broken iPhone. Maybe I should have put in the first time or something like that. What I want to do is take people on a journey. And lately what I've been like last year and the year before was like how to help people get cool technology on a budget or something like that. Right. But that was kind of the idea. Now I'm kind of like, follow me on an experience. And the Mac was an experience. My first time using a Mac, first time trying to repair an iPhone. Like these experiences are what I want to do. Just trying to figure out how to do it isn't, because I've told you privately, and I'll say it here, I have a hard time, generally speaking, coming up with video ideas. With the exception of the last like 10 videos, which I had almost figured out in advance, I have a hard time. Like I have no ideas for any videos this week, except for the one I just said about to cancel. But like, I have no idea. Greg, on the other hand, has millions. He has millions of ideas. He just, you know, takes him a while to do a video every so often.
It's true.
But he's got millions of ideas. So we're exact opposite. We just need to merge together and have the perfect YouTube.
If me and Travis merged together, I think we'd be like a 2 million channel right now with all of our ideas, man, and our mindset and our workflows. I think we'd be huge. This is a whole conversation we could have that would take up the rest of the GadgetCast show of... you know, trends and the way you make content changes. And I think a lot of people right now on our niche of tech YouTube, I think there is a change coming to what type of content people value. And I noticed we're going to jump topics. I had some more questions, but we're running a little late here. You know, your iPhone video, I think more people should go watch it. It was really fun to watch, you know, you fixing the broken iPhone, everything that went with it. I think it's a great experience. I think you do have to maybe, you know, we should retitle it. I don't know, maybe new thumbnail, because I think that video deserves a lot more views. And I think it's interesting enough that it should get them eventually. Yeah. I think it will find its audience. I don't know. Maybe we should ask like Luke Miani. Maybe he's done like a ton of these. So maybe he could offer some like a catching title or something like that. But it's a good video. It deserves more views. Go watch it. But anyway, there's a changing landscape in technology. And I think a lot of people are realizing it with this OnePlus phone. Because I saw a lot of big name YouTubers, Austin Evans and others saying like, you know, these embargoes are really hurting us because we put out a video now of this OnePlus review and you got 100 other people doing it and we can't get a return on the investment. We get the views and they're not a lot. It's 10 out of 10 of our last video. And you know, in the YouTube game, if you see 10 out of 10, that's a sign to never make that type of video again because people don't want to watch it. And I think I know people get mad at me sometimes for kind of doing more news stories or leaks oriented videos and commenting on that. But I got to say, I noticed a trend a while ago on my own content that if I just do traditional reviews, people don't come to that content all the time. I still do it because I find it rewarding and I like to get my opinion out there. So I would never stop doing it. But there is a change in the tech landscape for better or worse on the type of content that people actually want to watch. And I think like 5 years ago, you know, tech YouTube was a lot more locked down than it is today. But there's a lot of new faces, for better or worse. There's a lot of new faces. There's more competition. And there's a lot of companies noticing people they normally wouldn't hand out review units to. And it's creating a lot of saturation where it's even hurting the big guys. The guys who you think could never... you could never release a video that would fail. It's hurting them as well. And I think Travis is kind of right that I think it's going to go through a renaissance where it's more experience oriented with our content. And I don't think a lot of people are prepared for that. And it's something that's going to be, you know, if you're into the inner workings, like you listen to Gadgetcast, it's a podcast. We kind of talk a little bit more in depth about how this stuff kind of works. I think a lot of people like that. But I think you're going to notice a big change in the next couple years on the tech YouTube side of thing. I think it's going to be, you're going to see a lot of new angles for things that people traditionally wouldn't do. But anyway, you have anything to say about that?
Because I think that's a great, and it's something that I'm very cognizant of. First of all, you know, I love OnePlus. It's really interesting that that good friend of the show, Michael Fisher, talked about this. Actually, we should just get him back
Michael
on the
Fisher
show
too.
We should just have him back on the show. I love Michael so much. And he was like, you know, and him and Austin Evans on Twitter were basically saying, you know, you got this wall, this flood of content, and someone's going to watch maybe two videos about the product, and then that's about it, and then it dies probably faster than a lot of other things. And he goes, so the embargo kills us. I tweeted, I go, you know, some of us don't even get those views. Like, we're fighting for whatever's left over, which might be almost nothing, because then we've got to buy it and wait for it to come out and stuff like that. The way I've been able to, like, I think the last time I did this successfully was for the iPhone 12, I think. And it was because I took a different approach to it, because I knew by the time I had it, all those reviews were going to be out and everything. And so I did the, I should not have bought the iPhone 12 Pro Max. We've got 107,000 views. So I kind of went against the grain on purpose, knowing that it was getting great reviews, and I wasn't doing it just to be a contrarian. I literally explained why I shouldn't have bought it. I thought I did a good job, and it, you know, and while I don't tend to care about likes and dislikes, I knew that it would be kind of a triggering thing, and it worked. So I got views off of it that I probably wouldn't have gotten if I just did an iPhone 12 review. Matter of fact, I know for a fact I wouldn't have gotten those views if I had done that a week or so after all the other big YouTubers had gotten it. And I've already learned that lesson, that I've got to be like, that's why I'm really digging into the experience side of thing. I'm going to try to get away from reviewing stuff as just a straight up review, and more about from my experience and trying to figure out if there's some type of angle that makes sense. And I would love to hear, and we're seeing it in the chat right now, but I would love to hear from the people that are listening on audio, send us some emails about why and when you watch certain videos. Like, what is it about? Obviously, you're going to watch the first reviews because of the first reviews, but what makes you think? What makes you think that after a week or so that those reviews, what makes you think, yeah, I'll watch this video? Like, even though it's about the same product, like what makes you go, yes, that's what I'll watch? What is it about? So I just want to understand and know what is it you guys are looking for so that I can get the content to you that you want to watch. And I just make sure that whenever I'm doing something that it's authentic, and it always is, but I also want to make sure you watch. So there's that.
Yeah, I think, listen, we should probably cut it off, cause this is like a conversation I can go on for like the next 3 hours, but I think there's an authenticity to it. And I think a lot of people kind of lose that eventually. Listen, when you make all this content and stuff, it's kind of easy to lose your way and like forget why you're like doing it in the first place, especially as you review more products. People get naturally a little bit more jaded. I think the important thing is to try and never lose that excitement, because most people don't get a new product every day. And when they go to buy their new phone every 3 years or their new computer every 6 years, they are super excited, because I remember when I was like broke and couldn't buy anything and it's like, yeah, when I used to get like a new, a new phone or a new laptop, I'd be like, oh, I'm so excited. But I think, as tech reviewers, you just review more and more things. It gets lost in the shuffle. Now you have increased competition. It's a whole thing, but let's talk about the OnePlus 9.
Yeah.
More particularly the OnePlus 9 Pro. I want to hear your thoughts on this so bad, because you were a huge OnePlus fan, and we've talked about the strategy of phones, and this OnePlus 9 you know, I hear it's like a pretty good phone. There's some problems with it. Like they made such a big deal about the camera right before it came out. And apparently like this camera, like isn't all they were like cracking up to be. Like people are just like, yeah, just get G Cam and there you go.
Yeah.
But, this phone, whatever, you know, it looks like a good phone. You like OnePlus phones, right? 120 hertz, all that stuff, LTPO panel. But the thing that really just stuck out to me, and I think I tweeted this, I said, OnePlus just made another expensive Android flagship phone. The thing that used to separate OnePlus is they had a phone that delivered tremendous value. And it looked like a flagship phone. It worked like a flagship phone. And it was like $200 or $300 cheaper than a flagship phone. And they've been like creeping that price up every year to the point now, you look at the OnePlus 9 Pro and it's just as expensive as something from Samsung. Like, Travis, I gotta know what you feel about this.
I have a lot of feelings about it because I've been rooting for OnePlus ever since the OnePlus 7 Pro, which is still one of my favorite Android phones that I still own. to me, it was an uncompromising phone. Some people say, well, the camera wasn't as good when it came out, but they did work on it, and it actually ended up being a very solid camera, and everything about it is something that I love. Though I love the look, I love the fact they were trying something different with the camera. They were just, the operating system was fast. And I worried going into the 9 because after the 8 came out and it wasn't, and it seemed like a half step back for me, I was worried the 9 would do the same, and they did. The one thing they did do is with the regular 9, the price is right. They got that, or right close. It's good. It's a good price, $720 or something like this. Not bad. But with the Pro, which is the only one you should ever really want, like the fun thing about like OnePlus phones is like you rarely want the base version. I mean, you just kind of, because all the good stuff is on the Pro. The interesting thing about the Pro is, you know, they know that the biggest criticism with them has been the camera. Yet they put out to reviewers, you look at Michael Fisher's review, and he basically tells you that the camera is just it's meh. And they spent all this money with Hasselblad or whatever the heck.
Yes.
Which was a waste of their time. Because typically when you spend the money for something like that, you've got to attach it to something that has like relevance. Like I understand that the company itself is a camera company, but the vast majority of people out there don't know what the heck a Hasselblad is.
I don't really know what a Hasselblad is. And like, this is like my like living, like, and I like cameras and stuff. And I'm like, like, I know Hasselblad is a camera company, but I couldn't tell you like, are they like a mate? Like, no one uses like a Hasselblad camera that I know
because they're
of.
Too expensive. Yeah. And the funny thing about it is they probably would have gotten more out of like a Sony lens.
Yeah, a Sony kind or of Canon. It has a Canon camera in it.
If you know, like, had a Canon camera or a Sony camera or like Canon, I'd be like, holy crap, what? It's the ironic nature of what they went too high. They went bougie when a OnePlus phone is not bougie. How many bougie people do you know that are doing video production level way super high are using OnePlus phones? Or any, even how many celebrities do you know that, which by the way, celebrities are the only one can own the pay the price of those Hasselblad cameras in the first place. How many of them are using OnePlus phones? Make it relevant to the people you're trying to sell to. And the best way to be relevant, the best way that they could do is to go back to the OnePlus they were when they were disruptive. That OnePlus 7 Pro was disruptive. $750 when it came out, and it was a flagship, end of story. Now we're like, okay, it's over 1,000, which means now I'm immediately looking at the S21 Plus. I'm looking at all the phones, the price range right around it. And it can't compete with those. I love that they push technology at certain bits and pieces. Like they do some really great things technology-wise with the screen and a lot of that stuff. Like I love that they do that. But once you put that price on there, you have put a value on it that they can't match. You cannot match Samsung on this. You can't. Stop trying. It would be so much, everything would be forgiven if the Pro was $750 and the 9 was like $650 or something. They'd be like, oh, forget about the Hasselblad. Just keep the same exact camera. And it looks like the 8 and it's fine. Like, okay, it's cool. But for $750, this is the beast. Let's get it. Let's go. No, they had to go all the way. And you never go all the way, as they've said in multiple videos. And you never go all the way. And they went all the way. They shouldn't have done that. So for me, it was a disappointment.
Yeah, I think one of the things that budget Android phones used to like not be as great on was the camera. That still seems to be the biggest weakness for anyone who isn't like a Samsung, an Apple, a Google, is still the camera department. But they put all this money into you know, putting Hasselblad, you know, Hasselblad being as bougie as it is, right? Like, they must have paid a pretty penny to even put that logo on their camera. Like, Hasselblad wasn't like, yeah, you can put that on for free. Like, that costs money to even slap that on there.
And you know what? Technically, T in the chat makes an incredible point. The OnePlus 9 Pro is more expensive than the iPhone 12 Pro, which, by the way, has an incredible camera. Like, how? I hate this. I wish OnePlus's egg is scrambled.
I just don't know the strategy, but it's funny because go back and listen. I say this all the time. Go back and listen to older GadgetCast episodes. And Travis and I kind of like predicted this. We're like, yeah, they're just going to release like another expensive phone. The price is slowly going to creep up every year until we get to this point. And listen, I don't know how well this phone will do in terms of sales. I'm going to guess it being the same price as like basically an S21 Plus Ultra means not good things for it. And I don't know. I wonder where OnePlus is going to be in like 1 to 2 years. And I wonder like, where is like their marketing strategy after that? Cause I feel like they really lost their way. And I just can't see anyone picking like this Pro phone over like an S21. Like, I don't know why you would. I really don't know why you would.
And the funny thing is there were multiple people, including myself, who I saw during the presentation were right before they're like, okay, OnePlus 9 is getting pros. Let me go ahead and order this thing. And by the time the end of the presentation happened, people started putting their money back in their wallet. And by the time the reviews came out, because they were all embargoed to be released right after, everyone's money was back in their pocket. So it just, I like OnePlus. The CEO or whatever dude follows me on Twitter. They don't send me nothing. I'm still salty about that. They should send me something. But regardless, I'm gonna hold their foot to the fire. Go back to the way you were, man. We love the old OnePlus that was doing it right and doing it big and saving you money. All right, let's get back there, please.
Agreed. Yeah, I my comment stands. It's just another expensive Android phone, and it's really hard to compete with Samsung at this price level. When Samsung has the good camera now and they have the great screen and they have the great hardware, if you're just making a copycat Samsung phone and your camera's worse, it can't work out for you. It cannot work out for you. Any reviewer worth their salt is going to go, hey, get the Samsung. It's a better phone. So I don't know. Listen, we're running long here. Real quick, because I saw someone specifically mention it in the comments. They want to know our opinion on this latest Apple Watch rumor, the G-Shock Apple Watch, as they're calling it. Basically, Travis, I don't know if you watched my video, they're working on a more rugged design for the Apple Watch. Maybe it's going to be made out of like rubber and stuff like that, specifically targeted for like athletes or hikers, people who are more outdoorsy than me and you. What do you think?
I saw that. I saw your video and I thought it was interesting. It didn't make sense to me because it doesn't seem like an Apple move. Like their sport is very sporty and it doesn't look rugged. Like, when's the last time you saw or bought a rugged Apple anything? Like, what's rugged about Apple? So if they're going that way, cool. I have my doubts. I mean, I don't know. Is this, how much do we know this for sure? Is this based on...
Well, this came from a Gurman story, and his stuff is really good. He has tremendous sources. And he even admits in the article, he goes, Apple's been working on this for 2 years. They might launch it this year, but he's like, and they might cancel it. They don't know what they want to do yet with the direction of this product, but they're working on it. They obviously have prototypes and stuff like that. So it's something that they could potentially launch this year. They're not sure if they want to, though.
So they are definitely in with the fitness group, the fitness crowd.
Yes.
I get that. Totally, 100%. But rugged is different. That's the outdoorsy, going up, climbing up a wall, jumping out of an airplane type weird things. That doesn't feel like an Apple brand to me. And it's not that they can't expand into it. Apple can do just about anything they want to. But they've shown no real... I mean, they could have done that with a lot of things at this point, and they just never have. I don't know. I don't buy it because I don't think that's the only... If you get a rugged watch, you need rugged other things.
Yeah, I said this in my video, and this is the only thing it makes sense to me if they went this route. I don't know what the exact market share is on these types of watches, but they are popular enough that when I do Apple Watch reviews, there will always be this segment of the audience that goes, well, I use a Garmin smartwatch because I do a lot of outdoor activity and the battery lasts a lot longer. And like I fall and stuff like that. I go out for runs. So if this market segment is big enough for Apple, they got to expand the Apple Watch year over year. And they make like a special edition every year that's like titanium or ceramic. I don't know how many of those they sell, but if they're selling like, you know, if they can make this watch and it sells just as many as those versions, I think it could sell. The only thing I'll say is I don't think this thing would sell well if they just come out with like a more rugged Apple Watch. I think it has to have like sport features tied to it. And that is just namely longer battery life. Like if they make it, because it would be like thicker rubber, I think you could like just jam a bigger battery in there, make it a little bit heavier. I think if they could like double the battery life on the Apple Watch, I think it's a product that would probably do well. But if they come out here and just release like an ugly Apple Watch, I don't see who's buying that. I don't like, it doesn't, no one's buying it to me.
Well, if you're listening to the audio podcast, why don't you send us an email or a voicemail? Let us know what you think so we can talk about it on the next episode of GadgetCast. We'd love to hear from all of you guys and gals out there what you think about anything that we talked about today. Which, by the way,
The GadgetCast channel is the GadgetCast. What am I trying to say? The GadgetCast challenge for this week is to go out, get the Travis MCP special, the Oreo and M&M McFlurry. You can get both. Don't let them say, if they say no to you, you say yes. It on the GadgetCast. So you go get that. Email us your taste test impressions. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about tech this week. I want people to try the Oreo M&M McFlurry.
Right.
Let us know if it's good. Send us a video of you eating it.
Yes, please follow us on Twitter. The links are in the description and the show notes. Do that. But yeah, that'll do it for us this week. If you're in the video live stream, we're going to do something special for you. Of course, if you ever want to be a part of the video live stream, you got to go subscribe on YouTube to GadgetCast. So it's youtube.com/GadgetCast and follow us all the places and watch all of our videos because why else are we doing this?
Watch them like 3 times in a row. Thank you.
That would be great. And then share them to all of your family. Anyway, he's Greg. I'm Travis. We're GadgetCast. We'll see you next time.